Brian, do you need us to call somebody? Welcome, everybody, again to another edition of the No Mind Podcast. My name is Mitch Maxine. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you've got any comments or questions, as always, please send them to the No Mind Podcast Facebook page, my personal Facebook page, or drop me an email at nomindpodcast2021@gmail.com. Before we get going on today's topic, as always, let's go once around the table. Just say hi to everybody. Hey, Bob, how's it going?
Hi, how are you? Hey, how are
you? I was hoping you would have forgotten about that.
I thought so too.
Anyway, thank you. I'm doing great. And I hope everyone else here is too.
Oh, jeez. Darren, how are you, brother?
I'm doing well as well. I'm glad to be here. I think we missed last Friday or whatever. So, again, it seems like forever that we've been here, or since we've been here. So, it's good to be back.
Yeah, it does seem longer than normal that we've gotten together, but I'm still managing to put up one every 2 weeks, so I guess we're on some kind of schedule. And Rick, you there?
You. How you doing? Thanks for having me back. Now that my technical difficulties are settled.
You know what? Bob and I were talking about that. It seems like, you know, you can go 3 or 4 weeks and everything works perfectly, and all of a sudden, for some reason, it screws up for no apparent reason, and it sounds
right
like shit.
Right when you want to use it.
But everybody sounds awesome. Like, everyone's crystal clear and your levels are good. So, okay, we're off to the races. Okay, the topics tonight, folks, we're going to go around the table and talk about our pet peeves in the martial arts. And that could take 2 weeks on its own. And then once we go around the table and talk about that, we're going to talk about the things that inspire us in the martial arts. So let's get started. Anybody want to go first with the pet peeves?
I kind of want to sit back and listen first.
Funny enough, I was thinking the opposite. I was thinking Bob would be right in there with a list.
I've got stuff, but I was going to... All right, I'll start. What the fuck?
Right. Deadly.
Deadly, yes.
The one thing that springs to mind, and I'm sure there's a dozen others, but the one that springs to mind first, how do I put this? In a nutshell, instructors who are full of themselves. I don't know whether it's... this thing called the Dunning-Kruger effect, where when you're incompetent at something, you're so incompetent that you don't realize that you're incompetent at it, or whether it's this frickin' ego thing that we rail about all the time, and it seems to be so prevalent in our Southern Ontario point karate circles, and why that is, I'm not sure.
Okay, before we go any further, Bob, I want to get Darren's input on that, because Darren's got a wider range of experience with clubs than we do. Darren, do you get that sense as well that ownership, that leadership arrogance is widespread, not so widespread? Like, what do you think?
Yeah, I was just about to jump in, actually. I didn't want to interject over Bob, but when he said the Southern Ontario, I was about to say, hey, that's worldwide, man. I've seen it everywhere. Any tournament I've gone to, anywhere, I've seen the same thing. It's not limited to Southern Ontario by any means. So I think it's a good topic because it is a general kind of widespread thing.
It just pisses me off so much, and there's nothing we can seem to be able to do to stop it. It's just... part of the friggin' scene, and the only people who lose out to this are the students, and they don't even realize it, because when you join a club, you don't know any better. You don't know what kind of club you're joining and who's the idiot running it, if they are an idiot. Maybe they're not. You have no way of deciding, no criteria by which to judge which clubs to join based on the personality of the head instructor. So it's just a frustrating scenario all around.
I'd just like to ask, is this just the club or the instructor, or could this be proven in tournament settings? Like, I would assume that if I join a club and I don't know any better and the instructor is full of himself, and maybe I get sucked into it, maybe I don't. But when you go to a tournament, is the instructor full of himself because he's winning tournaments, so it's an ego thing? Or is he full of himself in the dojo, but he doesn't compete for the reason that he wouldn't actually win anything?
That second point seems to be the prevalent one in my experience.
And just to add to that, because I have an anecdote I want to relate from the Peterborough tournament that happened back in June. I find that arrogance in martial arts instructors has no bounds or rules or criteria. One of the most arrogant guys I know, as far as a club owner goes, I don't see his students at tournaments, and when I do, they rarely compete, and when they do compete, they don't win. I don't think it has anything to do with that. I think it has just more to do with their inflated sense of self than anything. And I've got a really good story I want to relate. A few podcasts ago, Bob, you were quite complimentary to Darren about his input and what he was saying, and you said that he specifically helped you to shift your perspective a little bit during that podcast. I don't know if you remember that, but Darren's response, you said that, it was very complimentary, and it must have taken you like 45 seconds to say it. And Darren's response was this: cheers. That was it. that was it. And I thought that, I remember thinking that was awesome. And we were at the Jushin tournament. Darren was sitting right beside me when this happened. There was a black belt there who had, over the years, given me a couple of helpful points about my kata. And I called him over because I thought, you know what? People who can render helpful information are fewer and further between as you get more experienced and older. I honestly felt compelled to let him know that he helped me that way. So I called him over and I said, you know, blah, blah, blah. Last couple of years, you've given me some comments about my kata. And it was really, really helpful. I just wanted to say thanks. And what I expected was for him to go, my pleasure, glad I could help, whatever. Instead, he pulled up a chair, sat his ass down, and spent 10 minutes telling me how great an instructor he was and how experienced he was. And, well, this is why I can do such great things. And he lost me about 15 seconds in. And it's exactly that arrogance that I think you're talking about.
Yeah, part of the difficulty of talking about this is when you try to call out other people for being, you know, full of themselves, arrogant, however you want to phrase it, I'm being judgmental in doing that, and it's kind of like I'm partaking a little bit in the egotism that I'm accusing them of, because I'm judging them when that certainly isn't a humble thing to do, a modest thing to do. It's sort of a contradiction in my mind to do that.
I'm not sure that that's true. I think that you can...
I just feel a little guilty doing it, that's all.
The thing is, my martial arts career and the people I've bumped into, I'd have to put it about a 60-40% ratio. 60% arrogance and 40% completely the opposite, wonderful, humble, lovely instructors. And I think the arrogant ones bring everybody down. I think it really lowers the bar, and I think it's dangerous and it's toxic, and I think it needs to be talked about. Okay, Rick, what do you think?
One of the things is you were talking about being in a club and the club itself not being that good. But like Darren has a lot of experience with a lot of different clubs, so he would be better to talk about it. It's like my experience, I've worked out in one club, have for my entire karate career. How do I know whether or not our club is more arrogant or not than else? Because unless we go to tournaments, yes, there is that. But tournaments are still, you got five guys judging, and three of them say you're good, two of them say you're not. You can still win. That's should even the pace out.
Or if the most egotistical, arrogant sons of bitches can win.
Yes, exactly. But how do they know, like, not the arrogant part is, but how do you know whether your club is good or not if you don't see other clubs?
There's a difference between, I don't think I'm answering your question, but just to make the point, there's a difference between being a club that's founded in an arrogant perspective and being good. Like Bob just said, you can be good and still be arrogant. There aren't necessarily mutually exclusive. But to answer your question, Rick, we're all adults. We've been around. You know arrogant people when you meet them.
Yeah, and I was trying to get away from just the arrogant part of it as far as the actual training. Because if you train at a club that doesn't have a top-notch instructor, you're going to think you're doing well because he's telling you you're doing well. But I guess what you'd do is if you went to a tournament, you'd find out that, oh, maybe I'm not. So
yeah, but
it
but,
should
okay.
work out.
Now we're getting off topic, but still, now we're talking about what are your goals? Does it matter whether you do well in competition? Does that factor
into... What if you don't care about that?
Exactly. Yeah. If you don't care about that, then who cares how well you do at tournaments? So whether the club that you're training at is a good club is relative to your expectations and your personal goals. If a student joins a club because they're just interested in the aesthetics of the martial arts, they don't care about competition, they're going to think a good club is different than someone who wants to win at tournaments and fight. They'll have different definitions of what a good club is.
Is it possible to be a modest person and run a successful club?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I know one guy specifically. Yeah.
I think you would. Your students would be going for what it is that you're practicing and preaching. So that's you might lose certain students that are looking for the arrogance. They want the whole Cobra Kai thing. There are students that will go for that whole, this is, we're the best and this is what we're doing. But there's also, you weed those out and you can still run a successful club without those.
And I think the type of head instructor you have, here's a question. Does the type of head instructor that's running a club attract like students? So if you're an arrogant blowhard as an instructor, do you attract arrogant blowhards as students? If you're a humble, what's the word? Not self-deprecating necessarily, but if you're a humble instructor, do you attract those kind of students? I wonder if there's some sort of connectivity there.
I suspect that many instructors assume that they have to be self-aggrandizing in order to attract students. And part of their reason why they turn out the way that they do, I'm not sure.
But there's a difference between being self-aggrandized, whatever you said there.
And, I know, it's hard.
I wouldn't have been able to say it.
And getting yourself out there and pushing your own product.
Rick makes a good point.
Publishing yourself. You've got to attract students, so you've got to go out and push your club. But you've also got to sort of puff up your chest and sort of go, well, yeah, we do this and we do this and we can do this.
I don't agree.
Rick, sorry, I... Just before you disagree, Mitch, I'll just agree with Richie on that. I remember when I first went back from Vancouver to Peterborough and I was running the grappling class. Yep. And some of the students that came in, it didn't matter what I knew or what I was teaching or how good I was. The first couple classes, what they asked is, what are your credentials? Like, what have you won? I think I might have been in a couple tournaments, but that wasn't my concentration in that particular art. It's kind of like what Richie said. You have to be able to show them that you are competent in that and you do have the ability to teach it, regardless of whether you've entered a pile of tournaments and won the Ontario National Championships in that. Yeah. And everybody knows to this day.
So how much of that is self-aggrandizement and how much of that is self-promotion? I mean, you've got to promote yourself.
That was my point.
That's a good point.
I don't think you have to be puffed up arrogant to market your club effectively, to say this is what we are and this is what we do and this is what we've accomplished in a marketing framework is different than a head instructor standing up saying, look at me, I just got inducted into the, you know, the nose blow South Dakota Hall of Fame or whatever. Like, there's a difference between arrogance and honest self-promotion when you're running a club.
That's a good point.
There is, and there would be a touch of, if you're running a business, you want to get as many students in as you can in the door, and then the ones that don't fit what you're teaching, they'll bow out on their own, and you'll keep the ones that fit. But you still have to do a certain type of marketing to get everybody in.
And I agree with that, and I remember coming up through the ranks at the club here in Peterborough, and I remember at one point the head instructor put this 10-foot painted ninja in the window. And I was sickened by it. And he said, look, I don't care what I have to do to get them in the door. Get the students in the door. And I almost agree with this. Do what you need to do to pull the students into the dojo. As long as the training is what the training should be. As long as it's a solid club and you train well. I mean, does it matter if you have commercials with dancing girls and you know, bells and whistles and ninjas flying around? Who cares? Do what you need to do to get the students in. As long as the training is what it should be, I don't know that it matters all that much how you market.
I think if you talk to a lot of people, over the years that have been training, like, say, for a lifetime of training, whether it's in the UFC or just in regular people's everyday training that have made this kind of a lifetime way of life. And you ask them why they started, and which we've done this before on why we started.
Yeah.
Why they're still at it is different than why they started. So sure. That lends to the fact that get the people in the door, because people might not know what they want it for. So if you advertise, you'll be a killer, or you'll be able to defend against all big people and bullies, or you'll win tournaments or whatever, get them in the door that way. And then when they start training, if they find the love for it and their whole attitude changes, so be it. And that's what you want. And if they go in there and go, well, this isn't working, well, then that's fine. They go somewhere else or they stop training.
And the other thing is, too, is for every 20 students you get through the door, you may actually keep only one up until even blue belt.
Yeah.
But if you're a modest guy, you don't want to promote yourself that way. You don't want to say, I'm going to do anything to get them in the door. You've got a personality. You want that to be your guiding thing in your marketing. Is there something wrong with that?
As interesting as this line of conversation is, it's completely not what Bob's pet peeve was about. And we've been going for 20
minutes. What was it again? I can't remember what it was.
So, we knew this would happen.
I know. It happens every time.
It happens every fucking time.
We're going to put the brakes on this one. Not only because this isn't what we started talking about, but we've got to get to everybody else around the table. So any last comments on Bob's pet peeve, which was arrogance in instructors?
I think it was a very good pet peeve, and I think everybody will remember it.
All right. Anyone want to go next? I've got a couple if you guys don't, but I'm
like
happy.
Like a pet peeve, or are we commenting on?
Oh, go ahead. Oh, no, sorry. Yeah, finish up with Bob. Sorry. Yeah, finish up with Bob's.
I don't actually have any comment on it. No, I just wanted to know if we were going to finish with it or whatever. Because I thought we had a good... I could have talked about that for the next hour, to be honest with you. But we'll let it go. That was Bob's pet peeve. I agree with Bob on that. It's not a pet peeve of mine, but I do get aggravated when I see that shit going on. I'd like to slap somebody upside the head for it. And the one thing I don't understand is how people can be arrogant when they could be disproven so fast. Right. Like if I walked in and thought, I'm this and I'm that, it would only take someone to beat me up for me to be put back in my place.
Yeah, but Darren, so, keep in mind you've got guys out there like George Dillman, whose entire
must have beat that fucker up at some point. Jesus Christ.
Yes, okay, let's assume that somebody has. But he's still out there pushing his no-touch bullshit.
I would wonder if I sat down and had a drink with him, is this all marketing and a business thing, or does he actually believe the shit?
You'll never get him to admit that he doesn't.
There are so many people I'd love to sit down for a drink with
me
and
too.
Ask that.
Oh, my God.
So
would
I, Holy is crap. This a marketing thing, or you just, does this work and you're happy to market it and make money? Or do you actually believe the shit and you can't believe the shit because it's not working?
Yeah, I foolishly thought that might happen on these podcasts, but no one is going to publicly admit that their public line is bullshit and that they know it's bullshit.
No, you can't. I just wanted...
Sure, but the thing is, this brings to mind an interesting story, and I think I've told it before on the podcast. The Flat Earth Society, which is not... anyway, whatever. The guy who runs it in the States, he was asked in an interview, if it was conclusively proven to you that the Earth is round, because this guy honestly does believe it's flat. But they said if there was unimpeachable evidence presented to you that to your satisfaction defined the Earth as being round, would you back off on this flat Earth stuff? And he said, no, I've got too much invested. I've got too much skin in that game. I would continue on what I'm doing. He admits that even if he was proven wrong, he would continue to do what he does. And I think it's the same in the martial arts. Those people who have that perspective, they've got too much invested in their clubs, too much invested in their quote-unquote training to turn around and back off now.
Is he drumming again?
Fuck's sakes.
Rick, any last comments?
I did have something, and then you got off on something else.
That happens.
The thing is, like, I just want to reiterate the fact that to teach... You have to have some arrogance to say, I know you need
disagree.
To know something.
Disagree
that I
right
need.
Away.
We're
right
not
away,
going. Hold it. That. We covered this in a past podcast.
Oh.
Because I took that same position. I got the shit beat out of me for it. So let Rick finish his point, and then we'll go on to the next talking point.
Yeah, but Darren, you're talking about being put in a position of you're told to go to that. But if you want
yep.
people
no,
to come in
got,
and pay
you got me there. That, no, you've got me exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking. So, yeah, you right. caught me on that one.
So, if I'm charging people to come in and I'm teaching them, I have to have at least a little bit of arrogance yeah. to be able to say, yes, I know what I'm talking about. And just, I think sometimes it just gets out of hand, I think.
Thing is, the last time we had this conversation, and here I am talking about it, the yeah. last time we had this conversation on the podcast, the point was made, there's a difference between arrogance and confidence. I think yes. you only need confidence to start a club and charge people, not necessarily arrogance. Mm. But I will also say the line between confidence and arrogance is pretty thin.
Yeah, kind of blurry at that point, maybe.
Exactly,
but,
sure.
Yeah, so you need a bit of both, okay. I think. But some you don't have to let it go to your, as they say, let it go to your head.
Okay, Darren, anyway. Your turn. Pet peeve.
Oh, shit. No, I'm not ready.
Okay.
I had one earlier, and then I just got so wrapped up in that one, I just...
Yeah.
Okay, Rick, do you have one?
I'll write it down, so when you come back to me, I'll have it. Because I did have it in my head, but I...
The only thing I could come up with is something in my own personal thing, and it's just that once you get into martial arts and you start working out, as you age, you can't do the stuff you used to do all the time. I mean...
My pet
That's
peeve
a pet peeve?
Is... My pet
is getting
old.
In fact, I'm getting old.
Exactly. I'm pissed off about getting old.
That's a great pet peeve.
It is. Not much we can do about it. I'm not
exactly.
sure there's much
diddly
to talk about.
You can do about it and not much exactly. to talk about, but that is a pet peeve.
We can just
That's
sit
not
around.
A, it's not a pet peeve. It's a peeve in the wild.
we could just sit around and bitch about getting old. That'd be fun for half an hour.
Jeez, that's good for a week.
Well, look, that's one of my podcast topics up and coming, and Darren's questions kind of touch on it, so I didn't want to do it, but aging in the martial arts, I think there's tons of conversation there. But anyway, okay, so...
And that goes back to, again, one of your original topics for tonight, like that whole ability versus rank kind of thing.
Yeah.
If you're aging out, how do you decide whether I'm... able for it or not? I'm busting my ass. I'm doing exactly what I can for my age and my body condition. So am I being, what do you call it, not condemned,
penalized,
more or less, something like that?
Yeah, but look,
traditionally the older guys are the ones that deserve the higher ranks, supposedly.
But that's when they went through all the other shit.
But
if I don't start karate until I'm 50, does that mean I'm just never gonna reach a rank?
I started kendo when I was 50, and it wasn't good.
Okay, but there, look, a couple of really interesting points have come up here. So someone starts the martial arts, karate, whatever discipline, when they're 50. Does that mean, by definition, they should never get a black belt because they're just not as able as they would have been if they'd started when they were 20 or 25?
Which we actually have personal growth versus how students are actually measured.
Right.
Yeah.
I've caught myself, I don't want to get into the topic if we're not going to talk about it, but
let's
I've
talk
caught
about
myself
it.
Before watching someone that's older that's just not very coordinated, and you're like, he's useless. But he might have improved a lot, but if you're going to grade him along with the other people's, he's not doing the techniques as good as they are. So are you comparing the techniques to the other students that are testing with him? Are you grading him on the criteria and
for what it's worth, I'll talk about my kendo experience at 50, and I came to it with 35 years of martial arts experience going in, so I had a huge advantage, and I know, like, I made it to first Q, that's a brown belt. I know I could, if I stayed with it, I could have made it to black belt easily. But
let me interject. Does that not sound like the last topic?
Yeah.
Is he not being arrogant there?
No, I'm being confident.
I'm just got much confidence, and it's not arrogance.
He's getting ready to start his own kendo club.
Yeah. He's in that between the lines there.
Okay, I'm being honest, and. And like I said, I quit. So, you know, I have no...
Okay, but Bob, let me ask you a question about that. You said you got to brown belt and you were confident that if you had carried on, you would have gotten to black belt.
Yeah.
Do you feel that your black belt, had you gone that far, would have been legitimate in terms of whatever definition exists in that criteria, in that culture?
Yeah, no doubt. Okay. Like, you'd be able to do it. I mean, sure. It's not a thing.
Kendo must be easy.
or
absolutely.
It's not that trying on you.
Or it's more knowledge based, not necessarily.
Oh, guys.
No.
Don't get me started.
I was joking because I've heard Bob talk about it. Kendo, they don't fuck around. Like, that's a whip ass martial art, frankly.
Anyway, I'll give you some links to some videos, but let's go on to the next.
I want to hear this.
You know the way we were brought up. All right, it brings to mind an episode when I first started kendo. I was a white belt and I was just a beginner. And one of the exercises, which everybody here knows, is that you lie down on your stomach, you stretch your elbows forward in front of you on the floor, and you pull yourself forward with just the strength of your arms, mm-hmm. and you do that for a while. Okay, so that's the basis of the exercise. Everybody else could do it fairly well. I, who perspire a great deal, got sweaty really fast, and when I put my arms forward to propel myself across the floor, slipped every time. I could not get any purchase on the floor in order to pull myself forward. So there I was struggling for, 5 minutes after everybody else had finished the thing. And the instructor was completely happy watching me do this. And I was not happy. I was in agony, but I was one part of me was happy doing it just for showing the fortitude to keep going. All right. So that was the idea. That part of kendo was something we all know and something that I was well-versed in. I don't mind saying that. And so that is a major part of it. And that I have full confidence in saying I could do. Like, I failed at it. I failed at the task, but in a good way.
But wait a sec. If I get the superficial goal is to move from point A to point B, but that's not really the goal. The goal is the effort you put into it.
Exactly.
So you didn't fail. You actually excelled at it because you kept putting the effort in, even though you didn't reach.
Well, okay, so we understand each other. I failed technically, but not,
Okay, let's get back to this question because I really want to get your guys' input on this. And Bob's a singular example and not relevant because Bob went into kendo with a world of experience behind him. So let's talk about somebody who walks into a dojo for the first time at 50. They've never trained before. Do you think that, all things being equal, that person has an equitable chance to get his black? And let's make it even easier. Let's talk about someone who walks into a dojo when they're 60. Do you think that they have a reasonable chance to get their black belt?
Okay, let me just put in something here. What if you wanted to weightlift? You wanted to be not a bodybuilder, but get into really good muscular shape at 60. Right.
Okay.
What are the chances of doing that? It depends on your resolve. It depends on lot of things.
No, it doesn't.
I don't think we have to go. That's an apples and oranges kind of thing.
It is.
I think we have enough with just what we're talking about.
But just to speak to that, Bob, there's a couple of different things. And I'm actually glad you brought up that example because it typifies my perspective on this. Weightlifting doesn't have ranks. It just is.
Exactly.
You do it. And you get you better because you do it. Exactly. If martial arts...
And you can measure it.
Exactly. So I don't think... Personally, someone who walks into a dojo at 60, and there may be exceptions to this, blah, 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 but I don't think anyone who walks into a dojo at 60, or most people, have the capacity at that age to do what's needed to be done to get a black belt. But who cares?
You just said there are exceptions.
Right, but let's assume this person's not an exception. What's wrong with them just training? Why is rank... so important? What's wrong with just learning and just doing the stuff?
Oh, don't get me started. You're absolutely right.
And this leads into my pet peeve, so I'm going to bring it up right now. The deification of rank in martial arts. Why is rank held like a carrot in front of everybody's nose.
We went over this topic a lot on one of the previous episodes.
Well, we're going over it again, goddammit.
Can I just interject on this one?
Yeah.
Because Mitch just opened up a whole can of worms, and that's a great pet peeve, and that's going to be a while. Can we take this? Because I know we haven't been on for a full hour, but can we stop pee?
Yes. Yep. And, yep. So I was going to say the same thing.
Me too.
I don't want to get into that topic and then have to stop 10 minutes in.
All right, guys, take a break, pour a drink. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back from the break. Just before the break, we started to talk about my pet peeve, which is the deification of rank. Why is rank so important? Why is the entire structure of the martial arts built around it? And I just want to expand on why this pisses me off so much before we start the conversation.
Well, before you do that, can I jump in and just say that the main point the last time we talked about this was for the student's sake. Oh, rank is for the student's sake.
I think...
Well, now we can decide that that's not actually good for the student, depending on who the student is, what age they're entering their martial arts training at.
Let me fill this out. No,
it was also at tournaments, how you decide who goes into what division.
Well, wait a second. Let's not remember back to what we talked about last time. Let me frame what I'm talking about, and the conversation will go from there. So I think with
Heil Hitler.
Well, it's my podcast. Fuck you. Fucking hell, probably. That's hilarious. No, the issue with me is I understand why rank exists, and I understand the milestone that rank represents, and I get that. But I think it's gotten to the point where it's gone to such an extreme that the rank itself has become more important than what you have to do to achieve the rank. Getting the rank has become more important than learning the stuff you need to learn. And that's what pisses me off. And especially connected to someone who's 60. So why stop at 60? Someone goes into a dojo at 80. Would you turn them away? Of course not. You'll let them train. You'll understand that they can't do what everybody else can who's younger. But I'm of the opinion that someone who walks onto a dojo floor at 80 should never be given a black belt. They're just not ever going to be able to do the techniques in a competent way. And I think it should be enough, and not just for them, but for everybody, that you're learning, you're getting better, you're doing the things that are part of the curriculum. Why does everybody hang their hat on what rank they are?
Can I ask a question based on that? If, don't know how it pertains to what you're saying, but if we decide not to pay attention to rank and not take it so seriously, can you not be ranked as an individual? Therefore, whether you're wearing a blue belt, if you get a blue belt, it means you've achieved this level compared to what you were at before. So if someone else is a blue belt, they don't look at you and think they're better than you or you're better than them. They know they've reached that level in their particular training. And it's not based on a set of skills that's...
like an objective set of skills. Like you're saying it's subjective person to person.
It's similar to the weightlifting analogy.
Exactly. 100%. Yeah. Exactly like that. So if you step into a JoJo at 80 and you discuss with your instructor, okay, look, I can't do a lot of stuff. What can I expect to achieve? Well, where are you at now? So you measure your body fat, you measure your cardio level, this and that and the other thing, your standing heart rate. Okay, what do you want to achieve? I want to have a little bit better flexibility than I have now. Okay, those are your goals. And this is the rank system that allow you to achieve those goals and will give you those belts accordingly. So nobody else is bothering. Like if I'm looking at another blue belt, I don't give a shit what they are. I know I'm this based on what I'm doing. And maybe that's how ranks should be done.
God, there's so many questions to explore here. First of all, let's talk about one that Darren just touched on. Should rank be objective or subjective? Should there be a set criteria and an ability level that you have to meet in order to be promoted to rank?
Darren isn't suggesting that it should be subjective. It should be objective in a different way.
Okay, but
however, I recognize the fact that if you're in
if you're in a mixed dojo with many different ages and levels of ability, you can't suddenly compete against somebody else that's a blue belt when it's a subjective blue belt. It's not the blue belt that you are. Like if you're partnered up with someone, how do you partner up with someone? Is it the same size? Is it the same ability? There is a bit of a rank system that allows that. It's not necessarily a rank system to decide who's better, but it helps you partner up with people as well.
Right. There's the two aspects to rank. There's partnering up with people of equal ability, and then there's how far you've come in your personal development.
Well, if you're going to do grappling, I mean, you're not going to put like a 250-pound guy up with a 105-pound child.
Good point, but if you
put... They could both be blue belts, but you're not going to partner those two guys up.
That's a good point.
That just bolsters Darren's, not argument, but explanation that perhaps it should be a personal best sort of, I've done better than I have before, so I deserve this higher rank.
But let's understand then, Bob, that in judo, that discounts a lot of people from ever progressing.
Dude, I'm not arguing that that it doesn't disrupt the entire system the way Darren is proposing, but it's an alternative way of looking at things. That's all I'm saying.
First of all, the pet peeve I have is that I think rank has far too much importance in the karate environment.
All right, stop for just a minute.
I think we all agree
with that. What level are you talking about? Are you talking
any
about like
any level? Any level.
Even between white and yellow.
I think
white and orange.
Rick, why do we give white belt stripes on their belts?
We give them to the kids.
Why?
To show them that they are progressive.
Right, because they feed off rank.
They feed off that feedback that says,
right,
yes, I am progressive.
No, they feed off that rank because we tell them that's what they should feed off. If we told them that they should feed off or the instructor's validation of them without rank, then they would accept that. If we said, if we trained the students to ignore rank and to feel that progress of technique is more important, that's what they would put their faith in. That's what they would put their perspective towards.
But well, in any MMA club, there's no belt system.
Right. And this is my point. Darren said, like I asked that question and Darren said, I think we can all agree on that. I want to hear everybody's perspective. Do we all believe that rank is far too important in the martial arts circles? Bob?
I'm the one that advocated either you're a white belt or you're a black belt. That's a good system to follow. And of course, but the thing is, we're coming at this from a relatively mature, experienced point of view. And it's easy for us to say, you don't need rank. Do we remember what it was like when we were 15 and we first started and what rank meant to us?
That's a great point.
Yes.
In fairness, rank does inspire you. We're talking about...
No, progress inspires you. Progress, by definition of your head instructor, inspires you.
Yep.
Exactly what rank is supposed to label.
Yes, but wouldn't
that's how that progress is showed.
But
I don't inspire to a blue belt with some big fat blue belt that's no good. I'm aspiring to the blue belt that's really good. Yeah. So the belt's not necessarily what I'm aspiring to. I'm aspiring to the person that holds the belt that I think I'm inspiring to.
I want to speak to Bob's point for a second. Bob, I do remember what it was like when I started and how joyous and wonderful I felt when I got my yellow belt. That was I think I was more excited to get my yellow belt than I was to get my black belt, if I had to compare them.
Having said that, Mitch, we have film of you as a yellow belt.
Yeah, that, well, which is not
like
relevant to what
that.
We're...
I'd like to see that.
That's not relevant to the conversation. So
it's relevant to our
audience.
So you're
not going to see it. So don't show anybody.
No, I'll happily put it... I'll tell you what, if I can get that video, I'll happily put it up on the Facebook page, because granted, it's pretty funny. But my point is, I coveted my yellow belt. Why? Because I was indoctrinated by the club I was at that rank is that important. If the club I was at did not put so much emphasis on rank, I wouldn't have cared that much.
Are you sure?
Yes.
I think so, yeah.
you would have cared about advancing, and the thing is, how do you show advancement?
Exactly.
By the sheer nature of being able to perform a technique.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. That's what I'm advocating. That we should be excited about being able to do a technique better. Not that I can do it better, therefore I get this piece of cloth of a different color. People are so hung up on rank, as exemplified by the fact that we have all watched people who have done literally nothing in the martial arts for years get advanced to incredibly high black belt ranks. That's how important rank has become. Because, your perspective and blah, blah, blah. Here's a ninth degree black belt. You haven't strapped a black belt on in 3 years. That's insane to me. And that just so much more evidence in...
That's only in the higher black belts, though. I mean, that doesn't... You don't get that as a yellow to blue to brown.
Yeah, but that's what the colored belt... That's what the Q belts look at and aspire to. If they see this going on, what's a colored belt going to think? We need to understand that the student's perspective on rank and martial arts flows directly from the head instructor. And whatever the head instructor says, the students will absorb and the students will take to heart. And I think the whole rank, ooh, your yellow belt's coming up, time to get ready. Like, I hate that perspective.
I absolutely agree. I don't want to talk out both sides of my mouth. I absolutely agree there should be no ranks. I mean, in a perfect world where I was in charge, there would be none. But I gotta hearken back to the points made in previous podcasts where what do you do with the kids? What do you do at tournaments? And what it is too.
Yeah.
There is. I think that there could be a happy medium somewhere in there. I don't have the answers, but you would have to somehow, whether it's length of time you've been in there or what it is, but if you were entering competition, if your club happens to enter competition, whether that's the preeminent thing of your club or not, if you do want to have people challenge themselves and gain that experience, you have to decide where you're going to throw them in. But I've seen that in clubs before where clubs only have, say, three belts. So you have to decide when you're going to a tournament, what belt are you going to give that guy to enter a tournament? Just for the sake of entering the tournament.
That's like in the Karate Kid where the original.
Right. Exactly.
Where
exactly
he enters like a tournament that. Says, yes, he's a black belt.
Yeah.
Well, right. Exactly.
Not as goofy as that, but that is the kind of thing. You as an instructor, you don't want to send the kid in or adult or whatever into somewhere where he's just going to clean up because he's way better than everybody else. So you kind of pick a rank that's enough. If he does really well, he might win, but he also might lose. You would have to... I have very little experience in clubs that don't have a ranking system other than grappling. And even in grappling, when you go in there, you do have to decide whether you're beginner, intermediate, semi-advanced, advanced. And there will be people with the egos that will go in a semi-advanced, even though they've been doing it for enough years, and they'll win their little trophy. And
right.
that's if that's their ego thing, and they go, oh, I won. It's like, well, you won against less experienced people. Is that what you want to go around feeling? But there's so much involved in that. I agree with Bob. I don't think there should be any ranks, but there should be some sort of measurement that you can hand to people and say, you've just overcome that particular obstacle.
That's exactly what rank is supposed to be for.
It has to be graded. It's like the weightlifter's guy, right? If you wanted to be 60 or 80 and you want to go into weightlifting, you don't walk in and start doing lifts of 400 pounds. You start low and you work your way up.
Thing is, in a weightlifting circumstance, if you want to be perceived in a certain way, you walk in and you lift the weight. Can you bench press this much? No. Well, then you're not in that group. You're in that.
That's what Darren was saying. When you've been working out for 5 years, you don't compete against someone who just started 6 months ago.
The thing is, look, I understand the reason for rank. At the core of my being, I'm on board with Bob. White and black and other ranks are just for vanity. However,
in a perfect world, that would work.
Okay. But having said that, I'm okay with graduated ranking systems. I just wish clubs would stop putting so much emphasis on the rank itself and drawing back the and start putting the emphasis back
that's
on
exactly yeah.
the learning, the techniques, yeah. what you're doing to get the rank is more important. That's my issue. Okay, I got a question for you guys, and I forgot it, so give me a second.
I got a question, but I don't know what it
is. Oh, yes, here it is. And it leverages off this whole deification of rank thing. Let's say you've got a student in your club who gets to brown belt. Then they leave your club, and they go to a different club. And the club that they go to is perceived by your club as a club that doesn't really extol the virtues of the martial arts in a way that you think they should. And they promote that student to a black belt. That student comes back to your club for a workout. Do you respect that black belt rank or not?
Nope.
Please justify your answer.
I'll justify my answer that if you've come up the ranks in this club, then you must achieve the rank in this club. If we're doing the ranking system, whatever it is, just because you've gone somewhere else doesn't mean you've achieved it here. That's not to say I don't respect the person or anything like that. It's like, you didn't earn the rank here.
So if that person came to your club, you would say, look, I get that you got that there, but if you're going to come back here, brown belt.
What if you do respect the club that they got the rank at?
Doesn't matter. If they worked out at your club, our club, up to a brown belt, go somewhere else and get ranked up, when they come back, they should still be a brown belt. Now, if they went to the other club up until brown belt, and got their black belt there, then when they come to our club, that's a whole other discussion. That's sort of, well...
No, but this is the second part of my question.
Yeah.
So what I'm hearing is if you bring a student up to brown belt, they go to a different club, get their black belt there, and come back, their rank would not be respected.
I've just changed my mind. Okay. I think it goes back to how much value do we give on our rank. So if the person comes back and he's got a black belt from another club... Far be it for me to go, you didn't earn it. The other club is not very good. I don't know. I don't know what you actually had to do for your grading. I don't know what they made you do. You're welcome to wear the black belt here because you earned it at some stage. And if you suck here, then I'll just remind the other students that the black belt was obtained somewhere else.
I got a question.
You know what I mean? So it's saying, look, I'm not going to discount anybody for wearing a black belt or whatever rank they show up here with, but let's let everybody be aware that it didn't come from here. If they rise to the occasion and they're really good, then everybody's cool and they accept it.
Darren, if this person comes to the club and they suck, are you saying that you would say in front of the students and that black belt... This guy sucks because he comes from another club. We're not making any claims to his legitimacy as a black belt.
No, I know that's what it sounded like I said. But in a nutshell, yes. But that not to put the person out. Do you know what I'm saying?
I kind of don't. I'm not sure what you mean.
Okay. It's kind of an in-between. We're not giving credit because we don't respect that he has the black belt because he's not at the black belt level that we've, say, achieved at this club. But again, it goes back to that whole rank system. If we're not going by the rank system, then everything's okay. The guy wears a black belt, we're all cool with it.
What if I raise a student to brown belt, and then he leaves and goes to Mitch's club, and Mitch gives him a black belt, and he comes back to my club? I know perfectly well he deserves a black belt.
And this is the other This is the other part of the question. In one circumstance, you've got someone who goes to a different club, for better or worse, and they get their black belt at a different club. Then they come back to your club. How do you treat them? And I want to compare that to somebody walks in off the street that you've never met before. You have no idea who they are. You talk to them about their lineage. You've never heard of the people they've trained with, but they're wearing a black belt. Do you respect that rank?
We go back to pet peeves. Any club that I ever go to train with that I've never trained at before, I walk in and I tell them where I've been and I wear a white belt in there. But I explain. I said, look, I got my black belt whatever years ago or wherever it was, whatever style it was. And I said, but it's a different style and it's not here and I haven't trained in a while. I'll wear a white belt. And you say that to the instructor as soon as you go in, and they will say, okay, wear whatever belt you want and we'll assess you in the next few classes and we'll go with accordingly.
It's far better to have the instructor say, look, this is ridiculous. You should not be wearing a white belt. And he gives you the belt that he thinks is appropriate rather than walk in with a higher rank than
let me ask you guys this. You go into a club. You go to a new club. Let's say you move, work, whatever, blah, blah, blah. You're in a new city. You go to their club. And you do that. And you say, you know what? I'm going to come in as a white belt and you can put me wherever they want or wherever you think I fit in your circumstance. How would you guys feel if you were given an orange belt?
I don't give a fuck.
I don't either, and I get it, but I'm just curious what everyone's thoughts are.
Yeah, I don't give a fuck.
Until you learn the stuff that the other people had to learn for their ranks, orange belt, yellow belt, white belt, blue belt, you're not.
It would be.
You don't know their curriculum yet.
Orange belt, I'll fucking show them.
How many Cheeto Roo karate clubs do you actually know around the world? Like, I don't know of any. So I've actually gone to, say, a Kempo club, and you go in and you explain what you're doing. They go, what did you train before? And I was like, it was Cheeto Roo. And they're like, basically, what's that?
Right.
I've had people say, what's
that?
I have
too. Like, exactly.
I don't know. I thought it was fairly simple. I know where Kempo came from. I know where Cheeto Roo came from. I don't think it's like, fuck, did the Kempo guys not do their homework?
I guess
like,
not.
Like, fuck. Like, if you reach a certain level, surely you fucking checked out other styles of karate.
Or at least Cheetah
is not that big.
I know it's not, but you know who the fuck it is.
Right, yeah, but the thing is,
it's
look,
together
the point
with Shotokan, Cheeto Roo, Ishin Roo, Goju Roo, Wado Roo, all those.
Yeah, but, no, but we know that you can look up the ins. Literally, we all know where Wado Roo came from. We all know where Nahag. Like, that's all fucking.
I think Darren's point is Cheeto Roo is not one of the big styles.
No, it's
not. You can walk into a Shotokan club in Toronto and go, I do Cheeto Roo. And they go, oh, well, that's nice. I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
As a matter of fact, Cheeto Roo is bigger than Cheeto Roo.
I always have to explain, okay, Dr. Chitosi, blah, blah, blah,
this guy and that.
Yeah, but two or three of the guys that were different styles, they all worked out together way back, like 100 years ago. Shared their knowledge with each other.
That's an interesting point.
Apparently.
That's an interesting point. I think the circles of martial arts have grown over the decades. Back in the day when Funakoshi was training, the circle of people who trained in the martial arts must have been considerably smaller than it is now.
Here, I have an egotistical thing.
Nice. Thing. I always suspected you did, but...
Nice to have you.
No, listen, it just came to me as we were talking about the styles and everything. So I joined a karate/kickboxing club here in Ireland, and they have separate classes that prepared you for upping the ranks, to go through the ranks. Nobody wears a gi in this club. It's kind of hilarious that you would go through the ranks because there is no indication in anywhere in the club that you're of a certain rank. So when you, say, get your yellow belt, you don't actually wear a belt. Nobody wears belts. It's just track pants and a t-shirt. So I don't know. Well, I know exactly why it is. The guy's just making money. That's his. It's a club. Now, he does train. He is legitimate, but he's there for the money. At one point, I was watching people teach there that weren't qualified to teach. And I thought, geez, I've been training here for like a year or so. I could actually go through their shit and teach here. And I actually enjoyed the people, and I thought I might like to teach. So I went to one of the black belts that's far less qualified than me. It's not an arrogant thing. It's just the way it was. I thought, here, I'll ask him, like, what do I need to do to go through the ranks here? Because nobody's recognized me as a black belt because nobody wears black belts.
Right.
But I'm willing to go through your curriculum from start to finish and get awarded what you guys consider a black belt. And then hopefully I could actually teach here. So the very first thing, there was a grading coming up for a yellow belt. And I approached one of the instructors and I said, here, I'm thinking about going through this whole rank system. How does that work? And he goes, oh, there's a yellow belt grading. And he goes, you're probably capable of getting that. And I remember thinking, I don't want to sound arrogant, but I'm better than you. And you're the fucking instructor. And you're telling me I would be well able to get my yellow belt in your fucking club. And I think there is a semblance of arrogance there. Like, I'm admitting that now, whereas I'm thinking, no, I'm better than your instructors. Not the head instructors, but all the other fucking instructors. And you're telling me I'm okay to be a yellow belt. What the fuck?
This whole question is a minefield. you've got to wade through stylistic requirements, personal ego. It's so hard to get a handle on this. Like, imagine running a club that said no ranks, just white and black. There's a million reasons why that would fail in the current environment. People need that gratification. I don't know how to resolve this issue. I don't know where we
are. I think there is probably something in there that we could all figure it out. Not necessarily us, but could be figured out for the betterment of the students. I don't have it.
And it's not just, the thing is, it's not in a vacuum. Like, you can't start a club and go, this is how I'm going to do it here. If you're going to be in any kind of tournament circumstance, because like you guys have said, rank exists in tournaments, and almost every club that goes to tournaments has a ranking system. So if you're going to bring your students to a tournament, you've got to have some way to categorize your students relative to everybody else. It's an incredibly difficult...
Remember back in the day, the Kung Fu guys that used to show up at tournaments, and they had no belts.
Right, so they didn't.
Somebody just said, okay, you're at this level. But you're an intermediate. We'll throw you into orange, green.
I don't remember. I remember a lot of tournaments, especially Phoenix Club in Bolton. They had a lot of Kung Fu guys come. But I don't remember any of them competing at the Q Belt ranks. I remember a lot of them competing at Black Belt.
I don't see a Q Belt in there. And you'd watch, really? You'd be judging their kata, and it'd be some weird-ass fucking thing. And
what are you up to?
But yeah. That's just another argument for rank, because the Kung Fu guys who didn't have ranks, the instructor said, we'll throw you in at this rank because that's where you are ability-wise.
But that's fine. That makes
sense.
That's an argument for rank.
Darren's still got his pet peeve to do. So let's go once around the table. Last comments about the deification of rank and black belts and stuff. Anybody got any last things?
I agree and disagree on that one. I don't agree with the Q belts. The Q belts do need some sort of distinction or levels. For competition, two, to judge their own thing. Once you get past like a Sandan, I mean, does it really matter? Not to me, but hasn't in years. So the deification doesn't really come into it until you start talking about, you know, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th.
Okay, Darren, any last comments on the whole ranking thing we've been talking about?
Oh, geez, the comment would end up just being another source of discussion. So the only comment I would have would be, I would like to see a system where it's, say, subjective, everybody benefits from it, and, yeah. And I'd like to know, I know nothing about, say, back in the ages when martial arts were first kind of coming into their own. I don't think they had a ranking system back in the day. I think that started maybe in North America. I don't know for sure.
No. I think it was with judo or Funakoshi's karate getting into the schools in Japan around the turn of the 20th century.
Because when you're in schools, there's a grading system in schools. So before that, even in warfare, like you just learned how to fight. There was no ranking system. So I think maybe it was because they got into schools, they had to have some sort of curriculum, and you're graded on the curriculum. I'd like to see it gone back to the olden days. You just progress as you progress, and there's no grading system. And you'll know as you're going whether you're getting better or not.
In my mind, you shouldn't have rank. In the real world, you probably need rank. And I wish for that utopia in which people don't think about rank. Like Mitch, you've touched on a million times, that the students are tutored by their instructors not to need rank, to ignore it, and yet wear it because it's required for convenience at tournaments. How about that?
I agree with Bob 100%. I don't think there's a problem with having a ranking system. I just think too much emphasis is placed on getting the rank rather than what you need to do to get the rank. Darren, do you have your pet peeve?
Wait, Rick's got a comment on that.
Basically, I agree with Bob and Darren both. I mean, in a perfect world, there wouldn't be that much to do with rank, but you do have to have some sort of scale for pairing people for tournaments and stuff like that. The only other thing is, like, back in the day when you were talking about it, Darren, is the other thing is the only way they could challenge themselves is if you got in a fight and you died.
Yeah. No, I was thinking good. That too. Yeah, I was thinking like that they as didn't, well.
There's a ranking system for it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking that too.
He who survives gets the belt.
Exactly. It's like they used it for like life and death stuff there, man. It was.
You'd have a lot of dead white belts, man. All right, Darren, you want to take a shot at your pet peeve?
I do.
And my pet peeve is the following.
Going to tell us?
The following is my pet peeve.
The thing I'm about to say.
I think the biggest pet peeve, it's when you travel around and either go to different clubs or even try out different styles. It won't work if you're just a beginner and showing up somewhere. So I don't know how this would appeal for the masses, but it's when you show up at a club and you're giving it a shot and you just see the narrow-mindedness of the instructors. They're teaching you something and you're going, this is the way. And you're going, that's great. I'm training here and I'm here to learn and I'm here to learn your way. But if I do something slightly different and they go, oh no, that's not right. It's this way. And it's like, hold on a second. It's not that this isn't right. This is just different. And I'm willing to learn your way. That's why I'm training here. But you can't say this isn't right.
It's wrong. And don't say it's wrong. Say that's not the way we do it.
Exactly.
I say and that to you, one of our black belts that came from another club all the time. It's not the way you do it is okay, but that's not the way we do it.
Yeah,
here.
I don't say that.
I do. Yeah, I know. You're a little more crude.
I'm not crude. I'm just like, dude, that's not even right. It's not right. I'm sorry. There's no definition by which what you're doing is right. Anyway.
And it goes back to, like, I've been in situations where they will go, yeah, we do it this way. And I'm like, yeah, I'm happy. Cool. What's that for? And if they can't tell me exactly what's that for, then I'm standing there going, okay, brainwash, narrow-mindedness, you're not willing to accept anything else. And this is coming from an instructor level. And that's my pet peeve is as an instructor, I think we've all understood that thing where you reach a black belt and there's that cliche where that's the beginning of when you start to learn. So if you're at a black belt and you're still learning, that must mean you're still open-minded and you still should be accepting anything that comes in. And if you're sitting there going, no, I've reached a black belt at this level and I am now qualified to teach this level, and someone comes in and they're doing something different, you go, nope, that's wrong, it's this. And you're like, wait a second, why?
Darren makes a brilliant point, and let's talk about that for a second. Someone walks into your door. How important is it for an instructor or a practitioner to be able to justify the practicality, or at least not even practicality, just justify the reasoning behind what they do?
It's 100% important.
It's 100%. Not necessarily the practicality if you're not professing practicality, but if you are.
The reason. The reason. If I'm doing a spinning, flying, jump, fucking whatever kick, and you don't do it,
the jump, fucking whatever kick, oh, I forgot about that.
No, but
I haven't been practicing.
What I'm saying is, there's no practicality in that. So if I demonstrate it, and this is the way it's done that way for a reason. And
I'm going to say
the reason might not be practical. But this is just the way it is. Like a spinning wheel kick or whatever. I'm not sure how practical it is, but it is done a certain way.
We've seen, or at least I have, and Darren, you watch videos as much as I do, if not more. You must have seen that there are a couple of UFC kicks or highlight reels where you see a wheel kick working.
Deadly.
So, exactly. So my point is, I think the practicality of any technique, no matter how fanciful, is based exclusively on how hard the individual is willing to work to make it work. Like, we've seen that kick in, there's a UFC highlight reel, and I can't remember who did it, but he literally runs up on the side of the cage, pushes off, and does a round kick, and kicks the guy in the face, and knocks him out. The only thing that will change people's minds about the practicality of a technique is when they see it work. And most people are so close-minded that when they see a technique that looks fanciful and fancy and blah, 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 they go, oh, that won't work, that won't work. And they won't change their mind until somebody actually works the technique enough to make it work in a practical circumstance.
I got a question or scenario. there's that thing where, say, you practice, let's just say, a jab and a reverse punch, and you practice the fuck out of that, and you're really good at it, and you're knocking people out. At some point, somebody will figure that out, and it doesn't work anymore.
Right.
Could you practice so many fucking techniques, no matter how bizarre they are, but if you practice them to your heart's out, at some point, one of them is going to work in the situation that it's designed for.
Yeah, but the thing is, you can do one technique a million times, or you can do a million techniques one time. You
have I'm saying a million techniques a million times.
That's impossible, though. That's the problem.
No, if that's what you aspire to do. Like, I think the more techniques in your arsenal, the more opportunities present themselves where you can do that. Now, that's not what I want to do per se, because I don't have the time. But if you're an aspiring martial artist in today's world, it would be well in your benefit to do all these techniques, because you never know when that's going to work.
But there's no such thing as an infinite amount of time to practice these things. You gotta shave it down.
Do you, though?
It depends on what
you're aspiring to do.
But, Darren, you're right. If your opponents figure out what you're doing, then you have to do something else. Like, Bob and I went to a Superfoot Wallace seminar way, way back, and his big thing was kicks, right? He had three really nice kicks, and it was always on the same leg. And he says, after a couple of years, everybody knew I was going to do that. So he says, then I had to start developing to be able to do something with my hands. He says, and then I started winning again, or I started being able to compete at a higher level again, because they just smothered the legs and they knew that was coming, because that's all his arsenal was.
That's the evolution.
But
that's the same thing. You have to evolve and do all kinds of things. So that's what I'm saying. You can do all kinds of things, because you never know when the situation's going to happen where you can implement one of those things. So do you practice the basics over and over so that you can just do the basics? Or do you expand your horizons and do as much as you can? And maybe you'll never be proficient at any of them, but is that a bad thing?
But Darren, I'm going to echo what you've said yourself on previous episodes, and that is, you do whatever you want.
I like that.
But I mean, you're talking, you're saying a basic. Well, a basic for a white belt is a front punch and a reverse punch. Basic for a brown belt could be your, you know, flying, spinning, hoop-de-doo kick, and that could be his basic.
The thing is, something else that factors into this conversation is the stage upon which you compete. When you go into the UFC, the entire world's watching you. So if you've got a particular technique or a particular combination that you've worked, and you're in the UFC, everybody who sees you fight is going to go, okay, that's what that guy does. And the likelihood of them developing some counter to that technique is much higher. If you're just a small-time Southern Ontario or you know, in one little area in Ireland or whatever, you go to local tournaments, the likelihood of people knowing what you're good at becomes much, it's much less likely. So whatever technique that you're good at will probably hold you in good stead for far longer than it will if you're on a world stage.
Whose pet peeve is this?
Darren's.
No, mine was the narrow-mindedness of instructors. We just got sidetracked, as we always do. We're not even close to what I was talking about. I'm digging the way the conversation went, but it wasn't what I was actually
wasn't what I was talking. All right, so look, let's pull this back in. So, Darren, encapsulate your pet peeve again, and we'll go around the table a couple of times.
Yeah, I think it'd be back to just as I said, it's different if you're just starting out, because you don't really know what people are into. So you show up at a club and you're just doing your thing and you don't know what's going on. If you've trained before and you show up at a club, and regardless of whether you're knowledgeable in where you're at in your training, if the instructor says it's done a certain way, I think the instructor has to be able to explain to your satisfaction why it's done that way and why you should abandon what you've learned or incorporate what you've learned to fit what they're saying. And I've found in probably close to 50% of the circumstances that they don't. They just immediately say, this is what we're doing. And they cannot explain why that's the better way to do it.
And this is what I'm about to say is just by way of explanation, certainly not justification. But I think most instructors who run little local clubs, they don't have to deal with experienced people coming into their club. They're so mired down in, we do this because this is how I do it. And 99.9% of their students are people who have no experience at all and are perfectly willing to take them at their word. That when someone walks in off the street who actually has experience and crosses their arms and says, I need an explanation, why are you doing it that way? I think they're lost for that explanation.
But wait, I still go by, like, in today's thing, you have the internet, you have the UFC, you have all these things.
We've so talked even, about
but,
that before.
But even if you're an instructor, like, even if you've been brought up through the ranks, so whatever the instructor that you just said in point, he went up through the ranks of some other instructor, and that's why he's narrow-minded in the way he is. But surely he's watched the UFC. Surely he's looked on the internet, and he's watched some YouTube videos and some K1s and stuff like that, and he can recognize that there are other ways of doing things that are different from what he was brought up in that he may incorporate or respect or entertain, at least.
I gotta tell you, Darren, I admire your
optimism.
Yes, exactly. I admire
it also
your
begs
optimism.
The question, if you go to another club and the instructor's saying something and you have enough knowledge and self-awareness of yourself to ask the question, why do you do it that way, he should automatically go, okay, this guy's done this before, he knows a little bit about it, so I can't just say, you know, that's because of the way I do it. Or he's got to come up with some other explanation. It's like, okay, well, I know there might be better ways of doing it, but this is the way we practice it.
Exactly, that's my pet peeve, because that's not been my experience. People haven't been able to explain.
That's the way to do it.
I want to throw in a parenthetical question. Would you go into a dojo and when the teacher says something, you stand up in front of the class and question them?
Never.
I'm just confirming.
Wait
a second.
That,
okay? Hold on a second. There's a difference between asking an honest question and challenging the instructor.
Yeah. I mean, after class or whatever.
I've done it. Yep.
That's fine. I have too.
Like,
not in class, but after class. He says you should be doing it this way. You go, well, okay.
What about this or what about that?
But do you know what? Do you know what? Like when I do it, it's legitimate. Why are you doing it that way? It's not because I think my way is better. I actually want to know what the shit's going on.
What the theory is, what his theory is behind.
Yes,
yeah,
but again,
I can't demonstrate it here, but there was a sidekick, and I remember going, what the fuck is this? Why are you doing it this way? And he explained it, and I'm like, deadly. I didn't know that.
But again, Darren, I applaud your optimism. I think a lot of instructors, and I don't want to tag a percentage on it, but I think a lot of instructors do what they do because that's what they've always done, not because they've given a lot of thought to whether that's the best way to do it.
If only there was a rank you can give out to people who give a lot of thought to what they're doing.
Yeah, you could make it a really dark color or something, you know?
I have a side question here, Mitch. Yeah. Speaking of side, you were a fond person of sidekicks a lot of time, and I remember trying to close the distance many times and get nailed in the ribs by your sidekick. The way we were brought up doing a sidekick is not the way you nail me in the ribs in sparring. So I would have to say I'm not going to say we were taught the wrong way to do it, but...
Oh, I will.
Hang on. Okay. Hey, this is mine. Shut up. Darren said to me.
So, I know the way that I would like to do a sidekick, the most effective way to do it, and it's not the way I was taught.
Right.
And as I said, anytime I try to close the distance on you, the sidekick goes into my ribs, and it's not the way we've been taught to do sidekicks, but it's the most effective way that I've received the sidekick.
that's a graceful way of saying it. I received it.
I accepted it. I took delivery on the sidekick.
Broke my rib when I came in, but you know.
Not by choice.
You need my signature on that delivery?
Look, of all the
sidekick and the wrist, bam.
Of all the techniques we do in our style, I think sidekick is the one that's most poorly represented. It's the one that I would change the most if I could. Yeah. But yeah, to your point, I don't do sidekick.
So do you now? Funny enough, do you teach when you're teaching a class in say Jushin? Do you teach the way that we were taught, or do you teach the effective way?
Okay, I have done both, and when I do it the way I think it should be done, I always preface it by saying, "Okay, look, this is not how our style traditionally teaches this kick. This is a variation that I kind of like, and here's how it goes, and that's how I present it."
Could you not sit down with the other instructors and go, "Look, here, let's change the way we're doing this, and
Hang on. I've got a question that precedes that one, and that is, you got your method of teaching the sidekick from your head instructor.
Sorry, who are you talking to, Bob?
You.
Okay, yeah.
The method that you say the style teaches about how to do a sidekick.
Yep.
You got it from your instructor.
Yes.
Did he change it? Was he faithful to the style?
Oh,
Who knows?
I don't know. I don't know how the style evolved prior to him.
Yeah. It evolved a great deal through him. And is that right?
I think that... open another can of worms.
Yay!
Writing this down. Stylistic evolution. Podcast topic.
Devolution.
Right. Yeah, or evolution versus devolution. Honestly, Bob, I don't know. I don't know how he was taught to do sidekicks.
Yeah, I just threw that in.
But it's a good question. All I know is I don't like the way we traditionally do sidekicks. So when given the opportunity, I will introduce my perspective on sidekicks, but I'm slave enough to the chain of command that I'm not going to say this is right, this is wrong. If I were running a club myself, here's how I would do sidekicks. So I wouldn't do them the way you do them. I think the way we do them are nonsensical. But because I'm a member of a club and I'm I willingly make myself a part of that club, I have to say I will be faithful to how the head instructor wants this done. Having said that, I will certainly introduce my own variations when given the opportunity.
It's probably the best way to go about it.
Yeah. There's the way I teach a basic sidekick, and then I'll say I do not do that if I'm sparring.
Here's our style of how to do it, and here's the way that works.
Yeah.
Okay,
this works for me, but if you watch Mitch do his sidekick, you watch me do my sidekick, you watch Bob do your sidekick when you used to do, or Darren do a sidekick when the in sparring situation, none of them look exactly the same.
I think they have a lot more in common.
Be a lot more the same than the traditional way of doing it.
Oh yeah, but they're all still slightly different. We all each do things a little bit differently.
Okay, so the next podcast topic we are going to tackle is stylistic evolution.
Oh, my God. Next podcast.
Holy
all right, really, guys. I was just getting fucking set in. I'm like, what? We got another topic? Let's be deadly.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, it's been over an hour and a half. I think we need to...
Holy shit.
Let's rein this one in.
It always happens like that. I'd be like, yeah.
Exactly.
Another topic, deadly. Another drink, another topic.
And you have to have a break because I got to have a break if we're going to.
No, we're almost done, Rick. The next another one that we didn't get to tonight is inspirational stuff. Yeah. What inspires you?
That would have been great. I think that would have been a positive because everybody would have been on that wavelength, and it would have been a happy clappy.
I don't think it would have. I think it would have inspired the same level of conversation and conflict as this.
Yeah.
Night.
Yeah.
But look, we went pretty deep into the pet peeves, and maybe I'll call it something different. No, I'll call it pet peeves. That's fine. All right, guys, we're gonna bring this one to a close. Let's go around to the table. Oh, Bob's having fun now. A little while ago.
Fuck you! Fuck you!
Well, isn't that lovely that Bob's having fun? All right, let's go around the table once. Any final comments you want to make, Bob?
Fuck you! No, that was fun, man. And yeah, it was great.
Darren.
I'm going to echo what Bob said. It was just, it was fun. I think it got deep a few times, but I think it was fun. It was educational. And yeah, no, I wouldn't say I changed my mind any there, because I think everybody agreed with the same thing. I don't know if we defined any topics or we imparted any wisdom upon anybody in this particular discussion. But I think it was just like a discussion, like around the fire. Well, let's have a
chit-chat. Exactly, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, same as Darren. It was fun. It was like sitting down here in my basement with everybody here having a drink and just sitting chit-chatting.
I wish I was there right now.
Yeah. I'm fine here.
Oh, yeah, Bob.
Yeah, we know,
social.
Bob.
Bob Andy social fucking non-ranking system guy.
Bob the xenophobe is fine in his little basement.
He's fine in his
little basement room. All right, folks, we're going to bring this one to a close, guys. Thanks so much again. Look, even though the topic is kind of negative on its face, pet peeves, I think there was a
that's
lot
why
of
we should have went for the inspirational one.
Yeah, well, too late now. Unless you guys got another 2 hours to kill.
Yep, next time.
Yeah, has exactly. Always been a pleasure talking to you guys again, man.
All right, guys. Thanks so much. Again, anyone listening, if you have any comments or questions, post them to the No Mind Podcast Facebook page, my personal Facebook page. Or throw me an email at nomindpodcast2021@gmail.com. We're done. We're out. Thanks, everybody.
Hey, goodbye, ya. Hey, goodbye, ya.
I knew that was coming.
Jesus Christ. Bob's off the podcast.